Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Still here, huh?
Don't rub it in.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 9, Loser Take All. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Oh, no. What happens when the music says no more? Hello.
Hello. Dave, you were so subdued. So NPR in that intro.
So I just woke up.
Oh, okay.
It was like 90 minutes ago. Hi, everybody. We are back after our usual two-week hiatus from recording. Totally not rusty at all. shall we get into it, Sarah?
Sure.
All right. Let us start with our C plot. Kelly confesses her junkie past. So when the phone rings at her apartment, Kelly learns she is dating a squeef in clip two.
Hello?
Hey, beautiful.
Hi. I'll be right back. Did you just hang up?
Just a little phone code. One ring means that I am crazy about you.
I see. And what does two rings mean?
It means that I wish I was with you.
I don't think I'm ready to know what three rings means.
Good, because I'm not sure I'm ready to tell you.
Stud mania out of control.
This is the dumbest thing I've... This would be dumb if, like, a 13-year-old did it, but he's supposed to be in his early 20s. This is so embarrassing and stupid.
Smurfy. So smurfy. They haven't even done it yet.
Ugh. No.
Also, yet, nobody cares. Also, it's Kelly. Like,
He's really trying hard. I don't know why.
Someone else. Yeah.
Yeah. And as the scene ends, the phone rings again twice and Kelly smiles because she's an idiot. And later, when we rejoin them, Mark makes dinner for Kelly at his place and it is the 90s in clip three.
This is really good. What is it?
It's an authentic North African couscous.
As opposed to the Fugazi couscous from Lodi, New Jersey. Shut up, asshole.
When couscous was exotic, 1996.
The only defense of that is that if you ask for couscous and you're expecting, you know, little couscous and you get that giant pearl couscous and you're like, what the fuck? Not that that was a problem in the 90s.
Right.
I'm just saying, sometimes you ask for couscous and you get the Israeli couscous, the big pearl ones, and you're like, I wish I was dead.
Well, the couscous really? Critic has logged on, everybody.
I didn't realize you felt this strongly about big pearl couscous.
Neither did I.
I do.
Okay.
All right. Well, there goes your Christmas gift. Thanks a lot, Dave.
You mean his couscous gift. Mark learned to cook in Casablanca. His grandfather had TV stations overseas, and Mark lived there during high school. And did I mention it's the past? Clip four.
Mm, that must have been amazing.
Not really. It's kind of hard to kiss a girl through a veil.
Ooh, problematic.
Yeah. The ugly American has logged on.
No kidding.
Oof. Who would want to kiss you with that floppy hair? Shut up. Also, no one cares. When does he leave? Why is he still here?
He's really hung on for a while. Like when people were saying in the forums that Jenny Garth hated this actor and that's why he left. Like, get going. Not this week, not next week. Kelly says she doesn't know when he's kidding, and he says at least he talks about himself, and he doesn't know why she's so closed up, and he can't imagine what is so bad about her that he wouldn't understand. And finally, she tells him all about Coke and Colin, and he doesn't care, and neither do we. And I guess now we know he's really a man of the world. And then he says, speaking of problematic, he's had his own shameful cravings, and then makes a joke about eating ice cream in the middle of the night. Like, not appropriate to joke to an addict about, I feel.
Yeah, since she also had an eating disorder and was in a cult, and also didn't tell him that she got nearly burned up in a fire, but she could have escaped because she was right underneath a window. Like, this is just the tip of the Dumberg with this girl. Whatever.
Yeah, it's true. The Colin and Coke thing is really just the most recent thing.
Yeah.
In fact, it's not even because, oh, wait. No, that was, he did come after Terror Street Child. I forgot about that one, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Anyway, much later, Mark calls Kelly, and when it rings three times, he tells her that it means, I'm falling in love with you. Who cares? Moving on, if we may. Speaking of who cares, this is not much better. To our B plot, Steve rows a boat.
Oh, God. Okay. There is nothing interesting about this, except the visual aids at previously.tv will show you some really terrifying bike shorty attire. I know nothing really about crew. So is this like the shower shoes and socks I will let go?
Mm-hmm.
Is that how your sister was a coxie, right?
So yeah, she was.
Is this what people wear? Is like circus outfits?
I think that the like singlet type of thing that they wear, I think that is real.
Okay.
And it's still not
acceptable.
No, here's what makes it even worse. If I recall correctly, that colloquially they're known as sex suits. I don't know. Honestly, I never went to any of her regattas because she was just sitting in a boat yelling at them. Like, I could get that at home for free. But the most I ever learned about rowing was from The Skulls, starring Joshua Jackson, which she was a skilled extra in.
Nice.
On the one of the non-hero
skilled
boats.
At yelling at people.
Skilled at yelling at people. You know it's true. Anyway.
Be taller, Joshua Jackson.
Yeah, she was very critical of him. She said he was too short and too flabby to be a heavyweight rower. That was her opinion at the time. So don't at me at her. She will not respond.
No matter what you do in your future career, you're always going to be pacey. Just accept it. Accept it. Accept it.
Then he wakes up in a gold sweat wherever he is. The coxie.
Well, he ended up better than the other male protagonist of that movie, Paul Ooh, Walker. Yeah. Moving on.
Oh,
rest in peace.
Not
so Dick,
just, yeah.
Dick and Claire watch the keg crew row, and haughtily, Dick says that the crew guys, the keg guys, look better. But Claire wants him to give them more credit for their improvement. And when they get out of the water, boring shit talk between Steve and Dick ensues. It's too boring to discuss, like all of this, really. Until Steve proposes betting on the race. The loser serves the winner's frat a dinner for a week and their dates. Wow, the stakes. Could they be higher? Cough. At school, Dick and Steve snipe at each other some more, and Claire lets it be known that she finds the whole thing gross, and Steve claims it's not about her anymore, and there's some very youth-oriented jokes where Horatio Alger, Alger Hiss, and Horatio the Hamlet character are mixed up by Steve, which actually does come up again later, but Claire gets to close the scene with a truly outstanding what-the-fuck face, which I gift. You can see in the visual aids. It's under some what the fuck hair, but I'll forgive it because the face is gorgeous.
That hair is nothing compared to what comes later. Yikes.
Oh, yeah. So later still, Stevens is inspecting the rowing shells when Claire finds him, and he notes that they're made out of Kevlar, like bulletproof vests. He wishes he had such a vest around his heart. And Claire says he wouldn't need one if he used his head. He knew she was going to say that. And he starts to leave when Claire says she's impressed with what he's done and wishes he'd done it sooner. And he feels good about himself and leaves without trying to hit on her at all. Will negging work? Let's find out. Then it's time for the race. Steve is classy and gracious to a very suspicious Dick. And the race, not that I'm complaining, it goes on for so long. It's like 5 minutes of racing.
Yeah, like my notes were like, is this ever going to end? And then like dot, dot, dot. What am I saying? Like, this is fine. And where are they? Yeah.
I actually know where they are because when we lived in Los Angeles, we had friends who lived in a complex right near there. That's in Marina Del Rey.
Okay. I was just like,
do you remember Don
one,
and Derek?
Where does one?
Yeah, they lived.
Grow? Now I know.
Yeah, I guess. There.
Yeah.
Like there's,
who knows?
There's no water near UCLA or USC that they could row on. So I guess there, if they even have rowing crews, don't ask me. I don't get, and don't at me either. Cause who cares about any of this, whatever. Of course, Dick's crew wins. And then we get the reactions to the spectators on the shore and all of the nerdy guys. Did you notice this, Sarah? The keg guys are all a bunch of total fucking nerds. Like, seriously, enrollment in the frat has really gone downhill since the John Sears days.
No, but I actually thought of that it was like, it's not the same guy. But remember that like super serious blackball meeting pencil neck that was like, you're a
yes.
keg guy? It's too bad they couldn't yes. get him to come back and like glare disapprovingly at the proceedings. But yeah, it really was the lesser athletic lights, like Revenge of the Nerds level, lesser. Ugh.
Yeah, you can see these Poindexters in the visual aids. And in her boat, Claire realizes that she's not where she wants to be. And Dick gloats, but Steve is calmly prepared to live up to his end of the losing bet. And Claire asks Dick to give them a minute and tell Steve she's proud of him. And as is apparently tradition, the guys toss her in the water and then she and Steve look at each other wistfully. And that night, Claire comes to the door of the Welsh house with her hair crimped to Jesus. Sarah, do you want to give a little description of what we're looking at here?
I mean, it looks like there's the crimping, but then there's also the incredible like ancient Egyptian headdress volume of it that looks like the crimps mm-hmm. were laid over the material you use to stuff a pillow and then mm-hmm. tucked up. Yep. I mean, it is huge. And then there's also not continuity because it's pretty bad when she's at the front door. But then when she's inside Casa Walsh, it's even bigger mm-hmm. and yep. asymmetrical. And like, I'm just having trouble imagining how she goes to sleep. Like, I mean, there would have to be a team like combing it down and making sure spiders weren't living in it. It's massive.
Mm-hmm. It's very big. I actually don't get mad. I think it looks kind of cool, but for like going out hair or for being in a Spice Girls video hair, like just for going over to see Steve at his
yeah,
house.
That's the thing.
It's really a lot.
Like, and Claire comes closer than anyone else in the cast could to pulling off some of this like Hot Topic victim shit that they put mm-hmm. her in.
Yeah.
But this was just, it looked like uncomfortable. It looked itchy.
Yeah.
The crimping, I don't actually mind. She has like a good face for that kind of fine styling, but they just didn't have to make it so like big. And I'm
yeah.
trying to think of like a Baroque artist that would have had like the giant hair. It's very like Twilight of the, you know, Twilight of France in the late 18th century. Anyway, mm-hmm. you'll see in the visual aids.
Oh, and how. I will say, though, also in her favor, it's her color is on point and it looks very glossy.
Yes, finally. They're sort of like trying to go inside. They have this like a redhead or like auburn highlight trajectory in mind for her and Donna.
Mm-hmm.
And even Donna's hair is starting to look color-wise slightly better and less like, you know, that first week of newborn poops color that it's been all season so far. And Claire's is the yeah. same. She's got like a couple of little blonde threads, but it's mostly red now. They figured it out. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it'll all go totally off the rails very shortly, but it's not terrible.
No, we could always count on it looking worse. So Steve comments that he didn't see Claire at the bet settling dinner, which he served and cleared. And she says she begged Dick not to go through with it. And Steve invites her in and says he was doing a little reading. And we hear about that in clip 5.
You have changed. What book?
You're going to laugh.
No, I won't.
It's by Horatio Alger. It's a rags to riches story. Hard work and sincerity triumph over adversity.
You enjoying it?
Immensely. Hmm. Everything but the title, anyway. Ragged Dick. Kind of funny, huh?
You know, I don't think I ever want to hear that name again.
What's that supposed to mean? Are you saying
Yeah. I'm saying.
I love you so much, Claire. I really missed you.
I love you too. Shut up. Bite me.
Okay.
I can't get mad at them. It's so dumb, but I'd like them both so much.
Yeah, me too. I mean, now they're really going to have to strain for storylines because they're back together, but Steve is about to do something uber stupid, and she'll probably get pissed off about that. Yay?
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's it for the boat and dick plot, so let's move on to our A story. But first, we have a message for Lori.
Roman is Lori's husband of 22 years this very day. Congratulations! And he tells us that Lori is not just a fan of Beverly Hills 90210, she was also, in her high school days, a total dead ringer for Melissa, Brandon's one-episode teen mom love interest.
Roman wants us to make it clear that Lori was not a single mother in high school or at any other point in her life. It's just that in 1991, she really looked like Kristen Dottillo, who played Melissa. Congratulations, Roman, on both your 22 years of marriage and your very cute wife.
To mark the occasion, we made a list of the ways Lori has surpassed Melissa.
Number one, she didn't get pregnant in high school, from what we understand. Not that getting pregnant in high school makes you a bad person. Hi, Mom. She doesn't listen, but it's not something you do on purpose either.
Number two, if she sings along to Paula Abdul hits on her Walkman, she probably does it on key.
Number three, even if she were a stressed out teen, she wouldn't abandon her child with a total stranger.
Number four, she wouldn't carry said baby around in a wicker laundry basket either.
And number five, she'd never, ever spend more than 2 minutes with Brandon Walsh, at least not without the glass of a TV screen between them.
That's just smart. Way to be, Melissa's doppelganger. And from all of us here, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, Lori and Roman. And now to our A plot. Everyone slut shames Val except David. Oh, God. Frankie the baby is back, and he's kicking off at the Peach Pit until Val takes him, informs Nat, the worst father ever, that he is wet, and for some reason volunteers to go change him. And as soon as she's vacated her stool, Kelly enters, asks Brandon how Frankie is, and finds herself on the receiving end of this clip six.
Kid gets 3 squares of breast milk a day, has women powdering his butt on a regular basis. What does he have to cry about?
Stop sexualizing babies. This is gross and disturbing. Don't do this. Don't get him a onesie that says ladies man on it. Just don't. Don't do any of it. Stop.
And this is after like 30 full seconds of Brandon sitting directly beside the crying baby and rolling his eyes and making a bunch of snarky comments about how it's crying. Like, either pick it up and deal with it or go somewhere else. Either way, shut up.
Honestly.
Hateful.
Yeah, so Kelly, of course, turns this around to an indictment of the company Frankie is keeping, meaning Val. And Brandon defaults to his position of not wanting to hear about whatever it is between Kelly and Val at this moment. But all it takes is Kelly saying she doesn't know how someone so smart, meaning Brandon, can be so blind, for him to respond by asking what she's talking about, to which she's all, nothing. God, how short was this episode that you had to pad it with this bullshit? Anyway, she briefly coys around some more before coming out with it in clip seven.
Valerie claims to have been pregnant and had an abortion.
When?
Last week. She cried all over my shoulder. Steve's too.
He is a happy baby. I am dry.
Oh, yeah. Hi, my little darling. Ooh, my little hat went off. Hey, you got away with kids, Val.
Yeah, like Custer had away with the Indians.
I don't get it. Why wouldn't she tell me about this?
For some reason, she has trouble lying to you. A problem she doesn't have with the rest of us.
Ugh. Fuck both of you.
That's really all that needs to be said. Yeah. So Mel is at the beach apartment telling Donna and Kelly about David's inheritance, which David hasn't told anyone about yet. Mel is worried about what this money will do to him. David wants his freedom, and now, thanks to this windfall, he can afford it. And Mel wants one of them to look out for David, and of course, Donna the simp volunteers simply. And in the Walsh kitchen, Steve is finishing up some huge meal of ribs or something. It's like this is back before the race, so he's still loading proteins or whatever. And Brandon comes in and starts guilting him about keeping secrets. And Steve admits that he took $20 from the cookie jar once, but put it back. And of course, Brandon is referring to the Val situation. Steve says he found out by accident, and Brandon has an obvious follow-up in clip 8.
So you told Darth Taylor?
I just figured she should talk to a woman.
Right church, wrong pew, my friend. Kelly thinks Valerie's lying about the whole thing, including the abortion.
Yeah, well, here's what I know. Valerie said Kenny took her to the clinic. Kelly says he didn't. Valerie told me they gave her diazepam, but then she told me that she drove home. How's that?
And that's your whole case?
Yeah.
Next, you're going to be telling me Colonel Mustard did it in the observatory with a lead pipe.
I'm going to the marina.
Steve, what do you think?
I don't know what to think. Things just don't add up.
So you think she's lying, too?
Yeah. It's Valerie.
Way to be a friend, Steve. Fuck.
Yeah, not. Also, why does either of you care?
Yeah.
Because Kelly told you? And then you are like, Darth Taylor, like, do you like her and trust her judgment and think she's right to be talking shit about Valerie or not? Like, everybody just mind their own fucking business. God damn.
Also, that in that clip, like, Darth Taylor, right church, wrong pew, all the laughing, like, I don't understand how either of you actually feels about what happened because you're just being dinguses about it.
Yeah.
Very bad writing in this episode, like, extraordinarily bad, even worse than the norm.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, ugh. At the good old student union, Kelly finds Val in line for the snack bar and is a bitch about it in clip 9.
How are you?
Obviously not as good as you.
I can't help it. Telling the truth feels so good.
Well, hip hip hooray.
I mean, when I told Brandon about what happened between you and Kenny, I felt like just a huge weight had been lifted right off my shoulders. Hi, what can I get you? Espresso, decaffeinated.
Coffee, black. Exactly which part about what happened between me and Kenny did you tell?
Let's see. Pregnancy, abortion, the basics.
God, I hate you.
But when I got to the part about how I didn't believe any of it,
talk about the truth setting you free. If you knew what I went through.
Save the sob story for Brandon. You're gonna need it.
He'll believe me.
Well, he always has. But sooner or later, he won't. My money's on sooner. Together or separate? Together. My treat.
I mean, how are you this smug about being a shit talker? Shitty yeah. secret keeper. And also, what is the fucking point of decaf espresso?
I wondered that also, so I'm glad you brought it up, because I don't drink coffee, but that does seem very stupid.
Like, espresso itself is, like, the whole point of drinking it, like, it's not pleasant, particularly. The whole point of drinking it is because it wakes you up.
Right. Well, Kelly, wrong about something else. What a shocker. Mm-hmm. Brandon is lost in thought at his desk at the TV station when Tracy comes in, and he immediately decides to make her part of this also in clip 10.
Say you're pregnant.
I'm pregnant.
That's not funny. Say you're pregnant. Do you tell your best friend?
Absolutely.
And what if you get an abortion?
I wouldn't get an abortion. But if I did, I would definitely tell because I'd want a shoulder to cry on.
And what if the shoulder was mine?
Well, you're not an easy person to confess to.
Okay, say you made the whole thing up just to get back at some guy who hurt you.
Oh, then I wouldn't tell anyone.
That's what I was afraid of.
Any chance to film at 11 so I can figure out what you're talking about?
Wish I knew myself.
Why don't you just ask the mystery girl straight out?
I can't do that. I need more information first.
Then ask the guy.
That's a good idea. Thanks, Trace. You the man.
What? Is that what he said?
I don't. Here's what he's doing. He's investigating Valerie like she's committed a crime. Mm-hmm. Which, as far as he knows at this point, she has not. And what confessing? As far as anyone knows, she had an abortion from an affair with a married man and didn't tell Brandon because it's none of his fucking business. And she yeah. knows that he's just going to Bray judge all over her. Like, confessing? Abortion is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Brandon.
Mm-hmm. Like, her answer when it is going to be, I was afraid you were going to be judgmental. Like, well, yeah, he proved you right.
Yep, sure did.
But we will get to that. Donna and her bad hair find David in the hall at school, and he's all fired up about his class on to Tocqueville. And Donna can't understand how his mood turned around so dramatically, but she's happy that he's happy, and he admits that he owes a lot of his happiness to her. And off they go to pick up some stuff for the house. Meanwhile, in the patriarchy storyline, Brandon goes to see Kenny at his office. Brandon says the family is good except for Val. Kenny is sorry about that. Things just got a little out of control. And his version of events is that he fell in love with the wrong girl. He would have done anything for her. Brandon points out that Kenny is still married and that Val went through this whole thing alone. And Kenny says she didn't have to. And Brandon's like, you didn't dump her? And Kenny says he cared about Val and wanted to help her. But after she said she was pregnant, all she wanted was his money. Yes and no. I mean, she did make up the pregnancy, but she did it because she wanted to, like, solidify their relationship.
Yeah. And when she didn't get that, she took money, which, I don't know. Like, yeah, it's blackmail, but I don't know. I'm fine with it. I think she should have settled for 10 grand. Just me.
Yeah. Well, Kenny describes the money as like ransom and tells Brandon how much he actually gave her. And when he hesitated about paying her, Val went to the house with diapers. Still yep. A baller move. Brandon asks if Kenny knew for a fact that Val was pregnant, and he says he doesn't, but he also doesn't care if it means this is all over. And then Brandon's like, thanks, and gets up and shakes his hand. Brandon, you are the worst friend. Also, fuck man. God.
Not really? Like, thanks for confirming that women are dumb, conniving sluts. Like,
yep.
Fuck you. Thanks for, confirming that you're Brandon. Bye.
Right. Yeah. Ew. Meanwhile, at the Delamo Fashion Center, I think that's the mall they're at. I know it's not the Beverly Center. Donna is following David around on his shopping spree, and one of his baubles is a $200 pen designed by NASA that writes upside down. Nice Seinfeld shout out. Donna stuffishly asks whether David needs all this garbage, whereupon David walks into the next door and starts yelling at her, one might even say manically, in clip 11.
I inherited $250,000. I can do anything I want to. I can buy all the stupid stuff I want. I can buy you all the stupid stuff you want. What do you want?
David, would you calm down? You're embarrassing me.
No, I'm not, Donna. They love people like me. I'm an impulse shopper.
You know what? Can we please just get out of here?
Okay, fine. You know, I've never been to Australia. How about Egypt? Egypt. If we left right now, I bet you we could beat the pyramids by breakfast. What do you say?
I say that you lost your mind.
You know, I really hope I never find it because I've never felt this good in my life.
Can we talk a little bit about how they're playing it at this point? Because they're really making it seem like it's just a funny goof and he's excited and not that this is troubling.
I mean... yes and no. I just think they don't know enough about any actual diagnoses to play it properly. And Brian Austin Green was not up to the task regardless. But yeah, they are playing as an opportunity to give Tori Spelling stuff. And also, not for the last time, but at the pace that he's already spending it, it should be gone by now. Like in Beverly Hills with his taste.
That too.
Like $250,000 doesn't go that far.
Plus, wouldn't some of it already be docked for taxes anyway? Like, he wouldn't get that full amount, I would
think. Probably not. He also wouldn't get it this soon. His grandfather's not even cold.
Right.
But
yeah.
Not the point, I guess.
No, it's not. So outside, some flunky wheels out a cart with all the junk that David bought. Donna can't believe that David tips the guy a 20, and then David goes in for a kiss, and this occurs, clip 12.
David, what are you doing?
What? What, I'm not allowed to kiss somebody I like?
No, not like that, not here. You know, I'm beginning to think Mel was right.
Wait, what does my father have to do with this?
He was just, he's a little worried about you.
And?
And he didn't think you'd listen to him, and he was concerned, so he asked me to keep an eye on you.
It's great. Father's got you spying for him.
No, I didn't say that.
What, is he afraid I'm gonna do something stupid?
David!
Something crazy? What, something deranged?
Oh, come on.
What, excuse me.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
What's this?
It was there already.
No. I haven't seen this before. Have you?
I can't be positive, but I don't think so.
Sir, cars are checked before they're parked. The scratch was there.
Excuse me, the lady said it wasn't.
Well, she's wrong.
This is her car. She drives this car every day. You're trying to tell me she hasn't seen a scratch the size of Texas? No. You did this. You have to pay for it.
David, please. I said I wasn't sure.
Donna, either you know or you don't.
Then I guess I don't.
It's just like a spy to take the other side.
I'm on your side. Keep acting this way and I'll be the only one who is.
How about being...
I really hate Mel for putting Donna in this position. Like, yes, she volunteered, but this is not her job.
It's really not. But what she should do at this point is rat David to Mel immediately. Be like, he's being an asshole and I'm done.
Yes.
If you don't want him to spend all his money.
Agree.
Tough shit. But the other thing is like, just let him spend the whole nut. Who cares?
Like, right.
Then it'll be gone and you won't have to really worry about it.
It's true.
Am I wrong? Like, it's... At this rate, he'll be done in 2 days, and then everything will be back to normal.
I mean, I guess if I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt, I would say we could speculate that he's putting a bunch of this on his credit cards and he's going to overspend what he actually has and or get into some kind of, like, you know, credit problem in Vegas in the next episode. But, like, none of that is spelled out. This is just me being charitable. I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I'm not either.
All right, moving on. At the Walsh house, Val comes home from school to Brandon waiting to pounce and stagily pretending to read a magazine rather than look at her like a real fucking asshole. Of all the things he does in this episode, for some reason that bothered me almost the most.
Well, he was like so obnoxious. He was acting like cheated on or betrayed. He's sort of like very primly and like the angry page turns. Like, this was not done to you. You have no standing here except as her friend, which is the last thing you've ever acted like, you twat.
Yep.
But we'll let him tell you.
So he basically tells her he knows everything. She says she didn't come to him because she was embarrassed, but he says that if she was telling the truth, she would have nothing to be embarrassed about. Like, I mean, an unplanned pregnancy is a little bit embarrassing by default, but anyway, then he sets a trap in clip 13.
Look, Val, I'd like to help you, but... You gotta tell me everything.
If you know about the pregnancy and the abortion, you do know everything. What?
I went to see Kenny Bannerman today. He told me about a certain $100,000 that I think you're pretty intimate with.
He did?
Yeah, he did. I thought you were gonna tell me everything.
Okay, so I didn't, okay? Sue me. This isn't about you, Brandon.
You're right, Val. This isn't about me. This is about you and whether or not I can trust you. How could you do it?
He hurt me. When I needed him the most, he wasn't there.
Kelly says she thinks you weren't even pregnant.
Who cares what Kelly thinks? It's over.
You're right, Val. It is over. Except for the money. You gotta give it back.
You're crazy.
I'm crazy? I'm crazy? Have you ever heard the word extortion? Huh? How about fraud? How about blackmail? You gotta give the money back.
Is that a threat?
Only if you make it one.
Brandon, this is ridiculous.
You're right. This is ridiculous. Let me tell you how this is gonna happen. You're either gonna give that money back, or you're gonna find a new place to live. Do you understand?
Why is she not already on the phone with a cab company? I don't get it. He sucks. He gave you an out. Leave.
He does. I assume the reason is that she wants to not have to pay rent and just pour the whole $100,000 into the business. But she doesn't ever spell that out really either. So, yeah, like, you, this is what your nest egg is for. Just take it and rent a place.
Yeah,
fuck
really.
Him.
God, and he's so mad. Like, he's so mad and self-righteous. Like, it just reminded me of when his self-righteous giant poof was screaming at the track team, I guess, for doing steroids while he was wearing a pair of shorts over another pair of shorts. It's like, seriously, where did you get the idea that you could speak to people like this?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because you've been doing it for years. And everyone's like, well, Brandon's right.
I also don't know why he's so mad. Like, there's nothing he loves more than getting to tee off on someone like this. Like, he should be thrilled. This is his Christmas.
That he's an actual investigative journalismer by digging into someone's business and then judging them. So
then Tracy comes over with tapes for Brandon, and when she comments that it's a nice house, Val says there's going to be a room available soon because she's moving out. And Tracy lets it be known that she's put together which of Brandon's friends got pregnant in clip 14.
Brandon's got a big mouth.
Actually, Brandon's probably one of the most discreet people I know.
I'm glad you think so. Look, I got a lot to do, you know.
I haven't known him as long as you have, but I know him well enough to know that he'd understand if you just tell him the truth.
I did tell him the truth. And now he wants me to be a little more virtuous than I can afford.
Well, maybe your virtue is worth a lot more than you think.
Well, that's my decision. Ugh. Not Brandon's.
Exactly.
Yep. And like, shut up, Tracy, for a variety of reasons, starting with Brandon's one of the most discreet people I know. Like, based on your acquaintance of like 3 weeks, fuck off. Anyway. Val then goes to Kenny's house. He gets the door and, of course, immediately has his guard up. And Val says it'll only take a minute, so he comes out. She knows he talked to Brandon. Kenny says he'll tell her what he told Brandon, that the money was worth getting Val out of his life. And she's hurt, but she gives it back. Kenny says he doesn't want it. She insists that he take it and promises that she'll stay out of his life forever and calls it a small price to pay for peace of mind. Like, wrong. Her friendship with Brandon is worth so much less than that money. Yeah, oh my god,
like, it's $100,000. And it's Brandon.
So Kenny says that's just what he was thinking, and then dumb wiener kid speaks for the first and last time in clip 15.
Dad, you promised we'd play.
I'll be inside in a minute, sweetheart. Okay,
where are you?
I'm an acquaintance of your dad's.
What's an acquaintance?
Someone you don't know very well.
Are we through here?
Completely.
Bye. The whole reason he wouldn't leave his wife was for that little fart knocker. Enjoy. More for you.
Yeah. Well, in my notes I assume what we've just witnessed is Val voluntarily giving up the idea of ever getting back together with Kenny and intentionally birthing one of his other dumb wiener kids. So, bye-bye. And then David is knocking on the beach apartment door in the middle of the night, and when Donna opens it, he is shirtless and wet because he went for a swim, but he forgot a towel. And Donna, disgusted, goes to get him one, even though she thinks she should let him freeze. And he excitedly babbles about getting her car fixed and lining up a Porsche as a loaner. And without looking at him, she curtly says she's worried about him and that she thinks he needs to get some help. She's scared of the way he's been behaving, but he ignores her and suggests going to a new club on Sunset. She begs him not to go anywhere, but he has to go. And the camera pushes in on Donna's very sad face and a lot of makeup for nighttime.
Yeah. Also, he doesn't even dry himself off. Like, he just sort of blots himself, I guess, in case they have to do another take and he doesn't want to be sprayed with whatever. Get, like, Jesus, the show.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Val is finding Val in the kitchen and braying that she's still there. He thought he was clear, and she says she got the message and gave Kenny back the money, and they discuss in clip 16.
Good.
For who? Not for me. The club's on the verge of bankruptcy.
Better your club than your soul.
You know what, Brandon? I'm sick and tired of you preaching to me.
Okay.
Thank you.
So are you staying?
Why? Is there some other test I have to pass? You want me to sign a loyalty oath or random drug testing?
A loyalty oath may be nice.
When have I not been loyal to you?
Okay. I want you to answer me one question. Were you really pregnant?
No. I lied about the baby and the abortion. Don't hate me, Brandon, okay?
I don't hate you, Valerie, but sometimes you make it very difficult for me to like you.
He led me on. He told me he was getting a divorce. I fell in love with him. I thought he could save me.
No one can save you like that. You know better.
I wanted to believe in him. He reminded me of my father, and when he deserted me, I couldn't take it.
So then you decided to take him?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I can't live up to your values. I thought I could, but I can't. I'm not like you, Brandon.
Thank God.
Val, it's okay. You did the right thing. You made amends.
Well, it didn't make me feel that good. Just want to let you know that.
You know, Val, you got to straighten yourself out, or you're going to get yourself in trouble so deep that no one's going to be able to get you out. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, I hear you.
Good. Because this advice cost you a lot.
Yeah, and it was none of your fucking business. Also, she wasn't in trouble. She got herself out. You made it an issue when you stuck your nose in because people were gossiping about her behind her back, exactly like she didn't want them to.
Excuse me, but like, if you're that concerned about what she, you know, about her ethics and her soul, then you probably shouldn't just take her word that she gave the money back. I wouldn't.
That's a good point.
Like, so in the end, she should have just kept the check. I'm like, oh, I gave it back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not like they run in the same
good
circles.
Follow up, dickhead.
Exactly. Whatever. Kelly assures Donna that she was right to dime out David to Mel, as she is finally done. And then Kelly also reminds us she is literally the worst psychology student in psychological history in clip 17.
So you don't think it's just the money?
Well, I thought that at first, but David's been acting so extreme. Like he's manic.
Who isn't sometimes?
His mother is manic depressive. Yeah. You idiot.
Donna also has a better memory of David's family history than the person who's always calling herself David's sister in clip 18.
I know. But then I think about his mother. She's manic depressive. And that can be inherited. Well, maybe David should see a doctor. Yeah, I think he should. But what if he won't go?
Yeah, what if? Well, the psychology student has no suggestions. Yeah. Great.
And if he won't go, then you should shove him off a pier and watch his giant shirt dress fill with water and he drown. Because ill or not, he's still a dickhead.
Agree. Brandon, speaking of dickheads, goes to Tracy's dorm room to thank her for talking to Val, and then they go for lunch. Who cares? Seriously, this is what passes for banter between them. Clip 19.
Just let me get my keys.
Don't forget those decals.
Why did we have to see that? Just let me get my keys. And don't that know. Whole scene is her like going to her bureau, getting her keys, holding them up, putting them in her pocket, shutting the door, like, cut!
Ugh. Yeah. Don't improv. And the thing about the decals is because she has a whiteboard on her door that's like has a shopping list on it. Like, where more useful could a shopping list be than on the door of the room you're leaving to go shopping? Whatever. Why do we care? David comes back to the Peach Pit after dark to see if Val will go to another club with him, but at least has the tiny amount of grace to say that it's in poor taste of him to ask her that, which true. So she says she lost the funds that she was going to pour into the Peach Pit after dark in an attack of ethics. But hey, there's that dead grandpa ex machina in clip 20.
You know, I always wondered what it'd be like owning this place.
David, like a bleeding ulcer.
Would cash make the bleeding stop?
David, why did you come here?
Well, originally to find a dance partner for the evening. But it seems like there might be more of a long-term arrangement.
Like what?
I think I might have a solution to your problem.
Wait, are you serious? You mean like a loan or something?
No. More like buying half interest in the club.
You have that kind of money?
And more. So, what do you say?
I say we have a deal.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Well,
this is not going to end well.
Like, you deserve him, honestly. You should not be running a club. You should definitely not be having anything to do with this freak and his giant shirt dress.
Yes.
And then they make out.
And yet.
Yuck.
Yeah. Right. That's what I was going to say. The thank you kisses turn into sex kisses. And that's it. Wow, this episode was really a slog.
Oh my god. This was like a garden of fascinating delights compared to next week.
True. So let us wrap it up with the MVP. The valet guy that told David to shove it, basically.
North African couscous.
Nice. Least valuable player. Brandon, who has no right to tell Val what to do with her justly extorted Kenny money.
Well, I would say Val for even listening to Brandon, but actually I'm just going to say large pearl Israeli couscous. Just kidding. It's Kelly. Fuck you.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that's true. She is the prime mover for all of Brandon's shit. She's really the
and
the
she
one
sucks
to blame.
At psychology. Well, I mean, too, I guess, are you sure it's not just the money that's bothering David? Like, well, I don't know. Yeah, they're seniors now, right? I know she missed a lot of classes. What with being in a cult and being addicted to cocaine and aiding and abetting a felon and being stalked by Tara Streetchild, etc. Oh, and also helping Jimmy die of AIDS. But you'd think that she would know some symptoms, and also I'd hate her and I want to stab her in the eye. So, Kelly.
All right, good call. We have a user-submitted challenge. This comes from @DennisMarkham on Twitter, and he asks for 5 ways zombies would have improved the plot. I would like to see how fast a manic David could swim in the ocean and being pursued by zombies might let us know.
I would like to have seen a third skull, or shell manned by zombies. And then the zombie crew would win and there would be none of this dinner bet nonsense. And we wouldn't have to deal with any of that subplot.
Although the zombies, you know what they would have for dinner, of course. The nerdy keg guy standing on That's the shore.
I mean, here's the problem with this challenge. Zombies eat brains, and on this show, there are very few.
Yep.
So, it's unsatisfying. I'm sorry, continue.
Yeah. Maybe if Frankie were undead, Brandon would have things to say about his character other than how horny he should be for breast milk.
Valerie could go into business with a zombie instead of David. They really never get tired. They make excellent bouncers, and she's probably not going to make out with the zombie.
True. Although, if Val were turned into a zombie a la Live on iZombie, then she could take on the characteristics of the various people whose brains she eats and become an even better criminal-minded extorter with all the knowledge that she would gain from her vanquished meals.
Until she accidentally eats Nat's brain and then, you know.
Yeah. Or some large pearl Israeli couscous.
Good point.
Guys, bonus challenge coming your way. Oh. You ready? Okay.
Oh.
It's the other telephone call codes. All right. How many rings and what it means.
I'll start.
7 rings means it's time to come over to have sex with dwarves.
Okay.
6 rings means it's time to worship Satan.
5 rings means it's the Olympics.
69 rings means, you know, but you got to let it. Got to let it ring.
And 10 rings means that you support the U.S. switching over to the metric system.
Wow, that's a tough one to follow. Here we go. Next time on Again With This, another trip to Vegas goes pear-shaped as David crosses the line from merely a pill to mentally ill. Plus, Brandon is an angel to Leo McGarry's daughter for some reason. You'll be visiting the West Wing dispensary for an eye patch after you peep our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. Excuse me, had to hit the cough button there. On our website at previously.tv, you can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm Potato Clock, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm here with my co-host, Darth Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is fearless leader, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.